Soycle.
Who's the most fun to drink with of the Republican lawmakers? Todd Alba did decide to text us who's fun to get a drink with in the GOP.
Fantastic.
Todd also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome back to the lunch hour of As Goes Wisconsin, May edition.
May edition. By Wednesday in Waukesha, it will be 56 and mostly sunny.
All right, I'll take it.
See?
That's an improvement.
Today, tomorrow, ugh.
Today,
and tomorrow's not so good either.
It's really the combination of today that it feels very cold and rain and wind
and gray.
And gray. Yeah. That is not a great way to start
May.
May. Our next guest, friend of the show, see him pretty often, which I always appreciate because I always like his takes on things. But Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area is back. Did you do anything for May Day, like in school? Did you have to make May baskets?
No, I grew up in the suburbs, so we didn't do any.
You didn't do any of that stuff? Why am I the only one? Every year we made May baskets, and you'd go and leave them on people's door, and you'd ring the doorbell, and you'd run away.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that now.
That's fair. No, you don't have any traditions around May Day, Dan?
I do not, no. Oh,
I got a picture from my mom first thing this morning saying Happy May Day, and she had made a little May basket.
844-967-2789. I'm just curious if you're an outlier now. Did you celebrate May Day, or is there a tradition in your household or your school? 844-96-PARTY. You can call and or text.
All right, Dan. So the shared revenue model. We've been talking about this not only just in Milwaukee, but across the state, because our shared revenue model has been broken for a while, and communities big and small across the state have been struggling to pay for basic services that they are responsible for funding because the state does not send enough money back to them. And so last week there was a press conference and talk about a potential shared revenue proposal for this upcoming budget, but not anything in writing. And so I wanted to bring you on and get your at least initial reactions based on what they said will be in it.
Yeah, it's very difficult to have a conversation about this right now, right? Because it's like there is no actual plan that has been released. Like Robin Voss had this press conference at the Wisconsin Center last Thursday. A lot of local leaders there, Cavalier Johnson, David Crowley, the mayors of Waukesha, Brookfield, Racine County Executive, a whole bunch of local leaders and leadership from the legislative Republicans, the Assembly Republicans, but they never actually released a plan. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard. Like I went back and I watched the whole 45-minute press conference, bunch of wonderful speeches saying that we really needed to address this issue and we needed to have bipartisan agreement and we're going to make the biggest investment in shared revenue ever in Wisconsin, never mind who may have broken this. It needs to get fixed. So they got on TV, they had the interviews. Robin Voss was on, WISN over the weekend talking about this, but there's still no actual documentation of what this plan is. So unless you're the type of person who's going to take press conference statements at face value, I am not one of those people, then the plan hasn't really been released. So we don't really know exactly what's going to happen. We have kind of the broad strokes of what this is going to be. It's, the core of it is just overall increasing shared revenue payments to municipalities. There's a bunch of stuff from Milwaukee. There's a bunch of weird stuff relating to the Milwaukee stuff that's in here that we can get into if you want. But we still don't really know what this proposal is. It's a remarkably weird rollout from Robin Voss and Assembly Republicans on this issue because when Tony Evers put this out as part of his budget and when he was rolling that out in February, there were a lot of details. There were a lot of details. Like whenever the governor's office sends out a policy proposal, there's a lot of details. You know, it's usually been looked at by like the Legislative Reference Bureau, like all these different types of things. They have been working on this shared revenue deal for the whole spring in Milwaukee while they haven't been doing anything in the actual legislature. And now we don't have any details of it. It's very weird. I don't know exactly now how we're supposed to be talking about
so
this.
So what is this? I mean, because I think, you know, Robin Voss is a lot of things, but a good politician is one of them. And so I don't imagine that he, I mean.
Are we sure?
He's good at politics. Just okay. Because it's, you don't agree, you wouldn't agree with that statement?
I think he enjoys a very advantageous scenario because he has basically an impenetrable majority and nothing he says or does will impact his ability to get reelected or have a majority in the next term. And so he uses that unfair advantage to get things, you know, that he wants advanced, but he doesn't really actually, you know, kind of get a lot done, at least that we've seen in the last 4 years in divided government. So
I guess that's fair. So,
advancing a budget that you know the governor is going to sign, is the degree of difficulty there is not exactly super high. So I don't know. Some people like liken him to a Mitch McConnell type figure. I think Mitch McConnell's actually kind of smart, as much as I despise him. But
well and Robin has a chin, you know. But anyway.
Jane.
He does.
All right. I've lost. So what do you think the strategy is of having this be the rollout? Like, what is the advantage of doing it in kind of this weird, we're saying what we're going to do, but not actually showing you what we're going to do way?
Yeah, I think they just had to, I think they just felt some pressure to finally get the news out there. Some sort of agreement had been reached. And I think that, if nothing else, that is the news from last week on shared revenue. Is that there is some sort of agreement with Assembly Republicans and with some of the, in particular, some of the local lawmakers from Milwaukee. I know this mm-hmm. is, you know, kind of statewide, but I think the agreement, you know, they from Mayor Johnson and County Executive Crowley, they said in a number of instances in that press conference, we're not 100% there. We still have some details to work out, but the framework of an agreement is there.
Yeah. And so with that, what from what we do know or what the broad strokes that have been announced, some of like the more unique Milwaukee aspects of it, what stood out to you?
Yeah, I think the tying any potential sales tax to paying off some of the pension obligations that is really driving a lot of these fiscal cliffs that the city in particular is facing. So I think the proposed, what is it, almost 2% sales tax for the city of Milwaukee to retire some of their pension debt, and a like 0.375 for the county for them to address some of these pension issues. Like that is a really important thing. It's not like a very, you know, it's not a headline grabbing type of type of thing, but that those pension obligations are a huge part of why the city and county are facing these fiscal cliffs, because they are under a different pension system from the rest of the state for reasons that I don't totally understand. Someone smarter than me, like Rob Henkin at the Wisconsin Policy Forum, is going to have to explain that one to me about why that's different. But that is a main reason that Milwaukee is facing this fiscal cliff. And I think, you know, the downside of not doing anything at this moment, of not having some sort of local revenue solution, particularly one for Milwaukee, there's some real downside here. So like the Milwaukee Common Council went through this exercise last week on, you know, examining what it would mean in real terms to cut, you know, 10 to 25% from the city budget, which is essentially what the city is facing without some sort of cooperation from the state. And the exercise kind of determined that much of this would fall on the police department, fire department, and the library system. And what it could mean, and this is based on a Journal Sentinel article by Allison Durr, that could mean an elimination of up to 890 full-time jobs, cutting up to 10 library branches, eliminating the Milwaukee Police Department's new traffic safety unit, shuttering MPD's District 6, and closing more than half of all fire stations. So this is a big deal. This is a really big deal. And the city, without some sort of solution, is facing some serious problems, and the county as well. Like David Crowley has said this over and over again, that by 2027, without some sort of solution, quote, we are projected to have no local dollars to fund local services. So that's transit, that's parks, that's all the things that are not like in written in state law as mandated by county government to do, that is kind of an extension of state government. So there are some real challenges for Milwaukee if there is nothing done. So even just having this broad, strange framework is encouraging in a way.
We're talking to Dan Schaefer, founder of the Recombobulation Area, about the weird verbal talking points that came out last week as far as the shared revenue agreement that is not quite in paper yet, but at least it gave us something to talk about as far as where the legislature is, Assembly Republicans are, and it seemed like a mixed bag as far as everyone's reactions to it, at least in the article, the coverage that I read about it. One in front of me is from WPR, and I think a lot of the League of Municipalities were happy about it. Like we've already said, David Crowley and Mayor Johnson said this was like a great start. Paul Farrow, County Executive Waukesha, hates it.
Yeah, not a fan.
Not a fan. And so do you think...
And Senate Republicans seemed kind of iffy on it, too. This is something that has been largely driven by Robin Voss and the Republicans in the Assembly. Usually you think of the legislature as kind of a uniform body because they so often vote alike. But there are some instances where the Senate and Assembly Republicans might disagree. And the Senate Republicans didn't have a whole lot of like positive things to say about this. They're just like, yeah, it seems like, you know, whatever. But there was very tepid type of response about this too. So
signs that it's like what's actually could be far from actually further than this press release last or this press conference last week led on as far as actually getting a deal done.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. It seems like there still would be some work to do between the Assembly and the Senate. And it seems like this would also be separated as a standalone bill that's not part of the budget. So like the Evers proposal initially was that this was going to be part of the budget. Now the talk there is that this would be separate.
All right, well, we will continue to talk about this when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. When you'll be there, 'cause that's what friends are supposed to do, oh yeah.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Moving along the sky. It's a car moving along the highway. You moving to California with me. I'm almost 2,000 miles from my home, sweet homie. 2,000 miles from the arms that bore me. 2,000 miles from my sweet home, Milwaukee.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we are talking to our friend Dan Schaefer about the not real proposal yet, but insinuations of what could be in a future proposal about shared revenue.
Budget insinuations.
Yes. Both what that means for Milwaukee, what it could mean for the whole state, because it is something that affects the entire state and not just Milwaukee, despite Milwaukee kind of being the most dire situation, being our biggest city that provides resources to the most amount of people and is probably facing the most imminent fiscal cliff of any city in Wisconsin. But it's interesting because I think I read over the weekend that part of the reason the pension problem got so bad in the first place is because Milwaukee was separate from the rest of the state with the pension problem. So it's like there's a bunch of things in here that are specific to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Instead of continuing to treat Milwaukee like, all right, this is how we do this for all the cities. It's like we put Milwaukee over here, and I don't want to pretend that I know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, or if that's a vindictive thing versus good policy, because Milwaukee is different. But there is more in here that's specific to how Milwaukee can function or what they would do. And what were some of the other things that stood out to you?
Yeah, I think there were, you know, it is interesting to see this, because it's just like Milwaukee operates in a different, as like a first class city, it operates in a different way than a lot of the rest of the municipalities mm-hmm. in the state. But it's, you know, a lot of this conversation is about local control, right? When it gets back to shared revenue, we're talking about like the local control sales tax that could be, you know, on a referendum as soon as this fall or something like that. It's about local control. And they put the GOP, and clearly coming from Voss's office, it seems like, on this, you know, put some sort of restrictions on Milwaukee, made some very specific asks within the deal for Milwaukee. So one of them was that J.R. Ross at WisPolitics reported last week is saying that the proposal would ban Milwaukee from using property taxes to run or expand the streetcar.
Oh, the hop.
It makes so much sense.
The most divisive public transportation, yeah, probably arguably in the country.
They've been mad about the streetcar for a decade. It's a small public works project, ultimately, that takes up less than 1% of the city's annual budget, but not more than 90%, it feels like, of the Republican complaints.
In the hearts
about
and minds.
Yeah. So I think that one is, it's just so ridiculous. It just seems like, you know, they're playing to their conservative talk radio base in a big way with that one. Another one, it seems like basically that the state would effectively control the Fire and Police Commission in a lot of ways. The Fire and Police Commission would still have an opportunity to choose the police chief, but a lot of its other responsibilities would be eliminated or moved over to the state. So it's another, you know, just yet another example of the state trying to control Milwaukee in a lot of ways. You know, the Milwaukee has a pretty unique system with its Fire and Police Commission, but it would have a requirement also. I think that there's a lot of public safety stuff within this, right? And there was an Evers proposal too, talking about like funding public safety measures. But one of them was that basically that the percentage that Milwaukee puts in its budget toward the police, this agreement would say that it would never go down, basically. So like Milwaukee's, the percent of funding that goes to funding the police in the city of Milwaukee is somewhere like between 45% and 50%. And I think this shared revenue agreement and whatever sales tax agreement that this would be would require that percentage never decrease. And again, I'm just going off of
what was, you know, said.
What was said? What's in the deep in the details on things like the like Jeremy Janine's piece at Urban Milwaukee? There's a couple others, you know, good stories, good coverage out there on this. We'll still have to see the deal to really get what is actually
in there.
But it's just, you know, the Republicans like to build themselves as the party of local control. That never seems to be the case for Milwaukee.
Yeah. Well, but also for a lot of other places, because I think they were saying that even the restrictions that would be on for every community with the increase of shared revenue, they were putting stipulations on what it can be spent on. And so it does come back of like, well, what do you mean by local control then, sir? Good sir. Well, as this develops, we'll certainly have you back as far as trying to explain what this means for Milwaukee, what it means for Wisconsin. But before we let you go, I have to check in on you, friend, and see if you are recovered from last week's debacle.
No.
No, I have not. You're still pretty sad.
I'm still mad. I was mad. The next day was after the Bucks lost. I was my daughter was joking that I was just like moping around the house. Didn't take it well. And then like yesterday, seeing like the Heat play the Knicks in the next round, I'm just like, I have to, I'm a basketball fan and I typically would watch all of these games and have, you know, the playoffs on all afternoon on Sunday. And now I can't even watch more like 10 minutes of
self-preservation, man. Just, you gotta do what you gotta do to take care of yourself.
Exactly.
But here's a quick, you probably won't have enough, just noodle on this, but see if you can answer it quickly. After the game last week on Thursday, we were asking people what, if they could do some self-reflection to figure out why they take sports so seriously and they let it affect their emotional state. Have you done that inner work yet to figure that out for yourself?
I haven't reached that stage of grief.
You haven't question found your why yet?
Question why I follow sports to begin with. I'm still kind of working my way through denial, I think, is where I am.
All right, we'll come back to that. Where there's a little bit more space in between the trauma. But Dan Schaefer, go subscribe to the Recombobulation Area. Some of the best independent reporting, if not the best independent reporting in Wisconsin. Thank you for spending time with us, friend.
Thanks for having me. Always great to talk.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Get yourself together. Well, I'm going to Elk Camp. I got my best boots on. I got my cooler packed to the top. And you can bet your ass I'm gone. I'm going to Elk Camp.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bright. She is Jane Mettenair. Leave it to Jane to find a song about elk.
Elk Camp.
Elk
Who doesn't
camp.
Want to go to Elk Camp? And I have elk sounds, too, for later.
Wow. How long did it take you to find that stuff?
Not nearly long enough. I could have spent much more time.
Well, that can only mean one thing. We're going to talk about elk. And specifically, we're talking about Wisconsin elk calves and the opportunity, which too many volunteers. There's too many people who already signed up to do this. So we're no longer recruiting you. We're just letting you know that this is happening between May 19th and June 18th. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is going to be collaring elk calves in order to do a multi-year study about elk herds. And so here to tell us more about it is DNR wildlife biologist Christina Kazuski. Thank you for joining the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show today. So, being able to share a few details about the process.
Yeah, so I guess let's just start from the top as far as like, because we have more questions of like, where are the moms? How do you not get stampede?
But we'll get there.
Let's just start from like what the purpose is, what the study is looking at.
Sure. So the reason we collar the elk calves is to look at their survival to year one. So information from the GPS collars, we obtain the GPS collar data, and that information goes into our population estimate. So we have one parameter into the population model is the calf survival rate. So that information gets put into the model, and amongst other parameters that go into that model, we can get a population estimate.
And about how many population, what is the elk population in Wisconsin, Christina?
Sure. So elk primarily reside in two different herds, one in the northern elk zone, which is Hayward, Clam Lake, kind of the Schwamigan, Nicolet Forest, and then the Flambeau as well. So that's what we kind of refer to as the northern elk herd. That is approximately 270 elk before calves are born this spring. And then the central elk zone, which primarily resides in Jackson County, we're sitting at about 125 elk before calves. So we do expect about 32 to 35 elk calves to be born in the central elk zone down here in Jackson County. And then to the north, they're looking at about 85 to 90 calves expected to be born.
So then those don't seem like huge numbers. So there's a lot less elk than deer.
Yes, yes. So this was a reintroduced herd, or these herds were reintroduced. So elk were native in Wisconsin, and they were extirpated in the late 1800s. So in 1995... 25 elk were reintroduced into the Clam Lake area. That was a herd sourced from Michigan. And then subsequently in 2015 and 2016, elk from Kentucky were brought to the Jackson County area. There was sorry, in, so that was 2015 and 2016. So that was approximately 73 elk were released in those years down in the Jackson County. And then in 2017 and 2019, about 90 elk were released in that Clam Lake, Chequamegon-Nicolet forest. So reintroduced herd, there's good population increases, especially within both of those herds. So definitely a lot less elk in Wisconsin than deer. Yes.
So are they protected then? Is this is not something you can go hunting?
So there is an elk hunt. It's held in the fall every year. Okay. For the Northern Elk Zone.
Got it. Okay.
The quotas are very small. State licensed hunters, there's a drawing, and the state licensed hunters had an opportunity at one of four tags the last few years. So there's been a hunt occurring in the Northern Elk Zone since 2018.
And Christina, what are the natural predators for elk? I suppose is it coyotes and wolves?
So we see some predation on the calves primarily, not so much as the adults, but so that's part of what this study kind of looks at is the cause-specific mortality of calf mortalities. So especially in the north, the Northern Elk Zone, there's a little bit more predation on the calves due to wolves or bear. We do see some predation on in the Central Elk Zone as well, but hadn't had a wolf predation in the Central Zone since 2017. So, just different landscapes, different causes of mortality.
We're talking to Christina Kaczewski, who is a wildlife biologist with the DNR, about the upcoming collaring of elk calves. And so I want to hear more about what this looks like as far as, because I feel like it would be cool, but also the process of going and putting a collar around any wild animal, even if they couldn't hurt me, I would assume, like, elk are not small. And so, like, explain more about why you need the volunteers, and also, like, what to expect, what the volunteers that you have can expect once they get out there and they start putting collars on these little babies.
Sure. So we utilize our preparations for this calf searching project actually occur back in the winter time. So during the winter, we can trap the adult elk, and we do that by making these larger pens, and then once they come into the pen, we can close the door behind them, and we will immobilize the adult elk. So we utilize that time in order to put out these GPS collars. So we use the GPS collars on the cows specifically to be able to gauge whether or not there might be a calving event. So when the elk are primarily a herd animal, so they typically reside in larger herds or groups with other elk. And so when we see a movement by the GPS collar away from that herd, and then a very localized set of data points or GPS locations, that's pretty indicative of a calving event. So it's that cow moving away from the herd, finding a quiet, secure area for her to give birth to. So once that once we see that on our computer screens, we can call in our volunteers who obviously have abundant amount of interest, but we're very lucky to be able to have them, because it is important to be able to cover some ground and have very keen eyes to be able to find these calves. So basically what it looks like is one to two kind of DNR staff will go in first and very quietly try to observe the cow. And what you're looking for there is maybe you'd be able to see a calf right there with her. So that's, of course, a positive observation. But you can also determine maybe by her size or how robust she might be, whether or not she had a calf or not. But so you can kind of pinpoint the location a little bit better, too, when you go in quietly, just a small single or pair of people. So then once that occurs, then, you know, the staff will kind of pull out and recruit or gather up the rest of the volunteers. So you're shoulder to shoulder, probably spaced like 5 to 10 feet apart, depending on the density of cover And so you form a straight line, like I said, shoulder to shoulder kind of, and you just kind of make a swath through the, you know, whatever the vegetation or habitat is, and you're searching for the elk calf. So,
are they laying on the ground? So they're not standing yet? Okay.
Yep. So they are able to stand, but their natural response to evade predators is very similar to a white-tailed deer fawn, where they're hunker down very quietly, motionless. That's their kind of evasion of predators. So it's definitely a tricky thing to do. At times they are missed because they are good at what they're doing. So it's a difficult
evolution.
Task
they're good at not being caught so they can survive.
Exactly. So Christina, so this is a bull. These are some elk sounds that I found. These are the males.
Yes.
But when you're looking for the calves, where is mom in all of this? Because I follow a number of dog mushers on Twitter who talk about their encounters with moose. And moose are terrifying. Are elk less scary than moose?
Typically, the cow will move off. Yes. So as opposed to moose and their defense mechanism, if you may, we've more often seen the cows will just move off. Sometimes they'll be making some mews, or if they're really agitated, they'll do a bark. But typically, they'll move off. And away from the calf. So, as the calf gets older, they'll invest more defense almost. So we try to go in, so we can handle the calves and they don't run away from us, but B, so that the mom isn't as defensive. So typically we try to aim for that 1 to 4 or 5 day old time period for those reasons. So,
it's not like she will abandon them once the baby smells like a human and she leaves it alone, she'll go back to it.
Yeah, so there's definitely a few precautionary ways we can help with controlling abandonment. We ask all of our volunteers not to wear any bug spray, and then also everyone is wearing a set of gloves. So as you're making these movements or sweeping motions through the woods, really anyone in the line can observe the elk, and usually, or the calf, it's usually hunkered down and doesn't move. But in case someone does need to, kind of grab the elk calf and hold it in place, we need people to have gloves, because it's just, we take as many precautions as we can to minimize our effects. And one of those effects might be scent. So that's why we ask for no bug spray and everyone to be gloved up. So we have not had an abandonment, instance in our collaring for the calves.
So how many years have you guys done this?
It's started I think soon after the release of the introduction. So they've been searching, and collaring since after the reintroduction. But we continually update our information, and that's what goes into the population estimate. So
I would bet that you would get the same volunteers though.
I was going to ask, what are the volunteers like?
It must be so thrilling though to be, out in the wilderness and looking, and then you find a little baby, and I just get chills just thinking about it.
Yes, it's definitely quite the experience. And I think that's why we saw so much interest in signing up for this volunteer opportunity. We had to close it a little bit earlier than what we thought, but we want to be able to give as many people the opportunity to at least be on a roster and have the potential to search for a calf.
I love that enough people are like paying attention to the DNR's website, and that this pops out. They're like, all right, go. the lottery is open. Get in there now. And it's so typical Wisconsin that there's that many people who are paying attention and want to go spend an afternoon or a weekend doing this. And so any other interesting studies that you're working on these days, Christina?
So similarly with the calves, we also do keep track of our mortality causes for the cows as well. So we're constantly making those investigations and just trying to figure out if it's a man-made kind of issue. Car vehicle collisions is a big issue down for the central zone. Mm-hmm. So trying to work with our partner agencies and even our tribal governments too to try to figure out how to minimize that as much as possible. But you know, elk's a wild animal and they don't necessarily know any confines or boundaries. So
and what was it like the first time you heard those elk calls in the wild? That must just be freaky.
It's fabulous. You know, it's such a large animal, especially in the fall when the bulls are bugling, and you're on foot on the same plane and level as they are. And they just thunder through the woods. So it's amazing to be able to hear a bugle out on the landscape. And that's, you know, that's a big draw for people too, is the, photos and the viewing and the, you know, bugling in the fall. It really is a big attraction to people.
Well, very cool. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us. Christina Kaczewski is a wildlife biologist at the DNR working on elk stuff. This was very fun. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate you too. Thank you very much.
Have a great day. All right, we're going to talk about parrots when we come back, a different kind of animal, and they like FaceTime. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
For elk camp number two.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. We were just talking about elk.
I love stuff like that.
Me too.
It makes me so happy.
I love that you called it freaky and she called it fabulous. I was also imagining you volunteering to do that. And for people who don't know, and why would you know? Because even when you watch the live stream, which you can always do on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, follow As Goes Wisconsin, you can see Jane, but you can't see her shoes. Jane has a great wardrobe of sparkly sneakers.
I do.
And I was just imagining as she was describing like going through the terrain and having to like spread out and try to find the calf of you like tiptoeing around in your sparkly shoes trying to find this like baby elk.
They're sparkly boots, Kristen. First of all, you gotta get, I like would like, you know, some knee-high rubber ones, and then I could bedazzle them myself.
Maybe we could do camouflage sparkly shoes. Someone's gotta make those.
Don't tease me like that. You're gonna make me crazy. And now I'm just happy that we have elk sounds. So whenever we need elk sounds, we got them.
What are you going to use them for? I feel like we have to come up with some kind of game or like callback that every time something XYZ happens, we play the elk sound and we scare the hell out of our guests who don't know what we're talking about.
But I do. I love our DNR and they have so many different things going on. And I love that people love it.
Yeah.
And are involved and care and sign up and volunteer and get out there. It's great.
Because I feel like this isn't the first time that we've interviewed someone from the DNR, by the time they came on the show, they no longer needed the thing that they were asking for.
Right.
Because it was already filled up.
Yeah. Which is just so wonderful. So well done.
Well done. So this has nothing to do with the DNR, but it is another species of animal. Parrots. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been a bird person?
My ex-husband had a bird.
And were you a fan?
I didn't mind him.
Okay.
You know, and we had canaries we had parakeets when I was a kid. Unfortunately, you'd go on, take the sheet off Cheaper's cage one day and he's on his back with a little claws in the air. So they never seem to last very long.
Mm.
Short lifespan. At least our parakeets.
I wonder how that works because I have two friends who now live in Madison who have, I think they have three parakeets. They have been alive for a while.
Oh, really?
They moved cross country with them.
Wow.
I mean, I think they've had them at least since they got married, and they got married in 2018.
Wow.
And unless one of them has died and they just didn't make a Facebook announcement out of it, but they were the biggest bird people I know as far as, and they just like let them out of the cage and they'll be working from home and one of them will just be sitting on their shoulder and it's just, they are bird people. And it's just there. That's how they live.
Well, and parrots live a long time.
Yeah. So this was, I love this, that they even studied this. So a new study had parrot owners in the U.S. teach their feathered pets to use tablets to make video calls.
Independently?
I think so. And so they taught, I mean, parrots are super smart.
They
taught them how to use a tablet and to, like, basically, I guess, with their beak, touch whatever, which is interesting because I always thought on tablets, just like your iPhone,
it was about your fingertips.
It's your fingertip, and I thought it had to be a certain temperature, which is why when your phone's too hot or too cold, you can't actually use it.
Right.
Or like why when you wear gloves, you can't just touch your, who knows. Anyways, they taught them how to use tablets. Don't ask questions, Kristen.
Okay.
and just like humans in the early days of lockdown, the birds felt less lonely when they could virtually hang out with other birds.
Oh, my God.
The parrots could choose who they wanted to ring, and the popular birds turned out to be the ones who initiated the most phone calls. Isn't that wild?
So Polly calls Cracker, and then Cracker wants to call Polly because Polly reached out.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Isn't that funny? And so Polly want to FaceTime, you know? And I just thought that was... It's always funny to me when, you know, the actual emotions. I mean, like, how do you study whether or not a parrot's feeling lonely? Like, what are the measurements of that?
I don't know.
I don't know either. But I love that someone was like, "This is, we're going to study this."
Okay.
And there's, and there's enough people who are like, "All right, this is the controlled group. This is the variable." Let's go.
Well, and even more amazing is they found someone to fund it.
That's true.
Right? You know, I can see a bunch of scientists sitting around going, wouldn't this be a great thing? And then they have to go get someone to pay for it.
And they're like, what does this solve?
Right.
What does this actually help?
How will this help us?
But yeah, so I thought that was an interesting factoid to share. But here's another interesting factoid. So we all know, I guess we didn't really talk about it much on the show, but Bed Bath & Beyond... End of an era.
Yes.
They are closing down. I think it was over the weekend was the last day you could go use. I used to just have like Ziploc bags full of those coupons.
Did you really?
You could only use them one at a time. You couldn't go in and like use multiple. And they just, I mean, literally, you should never have paid full price.
For anything
at Bed Bath & Beyond. But I guess if you have expired Bed Bath & Beyond coupons, even though Bed Bath & Beyond is closing, like all of them are closing, there are some retailers who will honor them, which I find super surprising. So Big Lots and the Container Store, which is pretty expensive.
Right.
Said they will accept Bed Bath & Beyond coupons that the bankrupt retailer won't honor anymore. So if you didn't throw those away yet and you want to go check out if Big Lots or the Container Store has what you're looking for, they will honor that.
That's kind of smart on their part. You're trying to get people in your store who might never have been in there before.
Yeah. Right?
I have never been in a Container Store, never.
Really?
No.
Oh.
I've never been in a Container Store.
They're wonderful.
For containers,
but yeah.
Are they like magical containers?
No, they're just any... Yeah, I don't know how to explain it. It's just like, it's like overpriced, but like any kind of size and like you have, I feel like it preys on your dreams of being an organized person.
Okay.
And that's why I fall victim to stores like that all the time.
It's like you could be organized if you only had this.
Yes, that is exactly what it is. I think we have established, if you have listened to this show for any amount of time, I am not the most organized person. I lose things constantly. I am very much... my mind is on what I am doing right now. And as soon as my mind is not on that thing anymore,
it's gone.
You're on to the next thing. And that could include, my mind was on opening the cabinet and getting glass out. And now my mind is on filling the glass. And so the cabinet just stays open. Like, okay. that is my life and Mike's life. And so I have these dreams. I'll get into these like modes of wanting to be an organized person and thinking that I will fix my life and everything will be better once I just have the right containers. And I will personally change my habits, my behaviors, my brain chemistry will somehow be different if I just invest in some of these things that then I will all of a sudden know that this is where all of my t-shirts go instead of on the floor. It's never actually worked.
I think container stores should contact you and you could be a spokesperson and sell that exact idea.
I could try, but I don't have any proof. I just have the dream.
It's an ad.
All right, we're taking a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, to mow or to not mow? That is the question in No Mow May. How do you feel about that? As Goes Wisconsin, we'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.